let your thinking go, put it out into the world, have it be available, give away your ideas, be very generous in what you put in your blogs and your newsletters and give away books and make it all accessible and be very generous with it, which then is good for your reputation and your positioning and actually positions you more as the expert anyway. So it's morally the right thing to do and commercially the right thing to do.
So you're a smart business committed to innovation, to service and to modern marketing. And you're asking, what's next? Wondering how you can become even more innovative. My name is Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and this is the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Hi there, innovator. It's great to be back with another episode. It's that time of week again. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust you enjoyed our most recent interviews with Leanne Hughes of First Time Facilitator and Deb Farnworth-Wood, the founder of Australian Skin Clinics. Now, I'm really excited to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest today, Peter Cook, who's the CEO of Thought Leaders and the Dean of the Thought Leaders Business School. Peter shows owners how to generate a highly leveraged income as a subject matter expert. He has a passion for progress and an obsession with implementation. Peter is a best-selling author with 8 books to his name, including The New Rules of Management, The Thought Leaders Practice, and the E-Myth Bookkeeper, which he co-authored with Michael E. Gerber of E-Myth fame. Today's episode is brought to you by the Transformational Marketing Hub, where you'll find a host of free and exceptionally useful information to help you transform your marketing. You can access the Transformational Marketing Hub by visiting innovabiz.co/VIP. Go check it out. It's free to join. And if you're a member already, just log in to get your resources. There's lots of stuff there. And we did talk today about giving away your information. So in our discussion today, Peter talked to me about the difference between a practice business model and the entrepreneur business model and the importance of thought leadership. Peter defined thought leadership as extending the thinking in a particular area. And we talked about how to value your product or service by starting with defining the journey you take your clients on and the transformation you help them make. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from Peter Cook. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today, from Melbourne, Australia, just up the road from me, Peter Cook, who's the CEO of Thought Leaders and the Dean of the Thought Leaders Business School. So welcome to the podcast, Peter. It's a great privilege to have you here as my guest.
Thank you very much, Jürgen. Honoured to be here.
Jamie Greenberg, who was our guest on episode 117 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we interview you, Peter. So big hello to Jamie. I spoke to him just yesterday.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate it.
Now, as well as a speaker and mentor, you're a best-selling author with 8 books that you've got to date. I imagine you might be writing some more, but they're all focused on business and having a business that gives you the life you want. So I'm really looking forward to exploring those topics.
Not all of them. One of them I co-wrote with my 4-year-old daughter at the time. So one of them's a children's book
That's
focused on Catsville, her magical world full of cats.
Excellent.
It's called Catsville.
So. Well, that's wonderful, writing a book with your daughter. So that's great. I might have to ask you about that as well, although mine's older than 4. So I'm really looking forward to exploring some more around the business topics, and we might find out some more about Catsville too today. But before we do that, give us a bit of a snapshot of your background. How did you get to where you are today, and what were some of the pivotal moments in that journey?
So I'm running a Thought Leaders Business School, so working with experts and around the business model of running a practice rather than a business. So it's based around an expert, around a thought leader. and kind of the business model of being a solo consultant. So how I got there was kind of by accident. I was a business coach growing a business coaching business, and because I was coaching my clients, we're all business owners, I was coaching them all into what they should do to grow a business. I thought to have integrity, that's what I needed to do as well. And so I had a decade, kind of all through the 2000s, of trying to grow a business coaching business, and ended up doing that reasonably effectively from the outside. So I had 10 business coaches working in the business up and down the east coast of Australia. I had a beautiful office. Everything looked really successful, but I was never actually making that much money myself. Mm. And you talk about a pivotal moment, was in May 2009 when Trish and I went to Bali. My wife and I went to Bali for a holiday, and we went for 9 days, which is a week and two weekends, because that was as long as I could be away from the business without the wheels falling off.
Yeah.
And we were staying on the Ahmed coast, on the northeast coast of Bali, and in this little bungalow that was overlooking the beach, and had this day bed under the veranda that we were actually sleeping on. So we were sleeping kind of looking out over the water, and in the morning we'd see the sun rise and the fishing boats coming in silhouetted against the rising sun in this little slice of paradise. Mm.
Yeah, and I had fabulous, yeah.
Yeah, amazing spot. And I had this pivotal moment you talked about, was I had this insight that back when I was a uni student, I used to get 2 months holiday a year. And now that I was a successful, in inverted commas, entrepreneur, 1 week was all I got.
Hmm.
And I thought to myself, there's something really wrong with this picture, with how I have created my business and designed my life. And I said to Trish that I wanted to change the business so I could run it from Bali and we could come back for 2 months. And that decision to change, kind of have everything come from the context of, I want to be able to do this from Bali rather than need to be in Melbourne, meant that over the next 6 months I got rid of all the staff. I didn't renew the lease on the office. I got rid of a whole lot of complexity, kept the half a dozen clients that I really liked working with, set them up to work over the phone. And then, what was it? Yeah, 6 months later, December, we went back to Bali, and we spent December, January that year in Bali. And I was making more money a day a week with a mobile phone and a laptop by the pool than I had been working 6 days a week, stressed to the eyeballs and running the whole catastrophe in Melbourne. Like, the turnover was less, but how much I was keeping was more.
Keeping yourself, yeah.
Yeah, and that was the pivotal moment there, was that transition from trying to grow a business with a whole lot of systems and a whole lot of other people to saying, actually, no, let's bring it just back to me and turn it into a practice.
Mm. Now, I'm fascinated, because I've heard you tell this story before, I'm fascinated as to what were some of the other steps. You talked about stripping out a lot of the costs and overheads of the business and paring it down to the bare essentials, and basically that was just you and your expertise. But what were some of the other things that you did? Because was that enough to kind of take costs out but maintain your takeaway income, or were there other steps that you took?
So there's a big mindset shift in that. So the entrepreneurial mindset is to get up and out of the org chart, to create a whole bunch of systems, to put other people in to follow the systems, essentially follow what Michael Gerber suggests in the E-Myth, and end up with a business that you can exit and that can scale and you can sell. Whereas the mindset in a practice is almost the opposite, is that you actually want to keep the core elements yourself. That it's, you know, we say the job of a thought leader in a practice is to think, sell and deliver. And so rather than trying to get out of doing that, you dive into that and make that as valuable as possible, so that you obviously then you can charge more for it and provide more value and more impact. But it was that shift away from saying, no, I'm trying to get out of it, to actually, no, I want to go deeper into it.
Mm.
That then allowed the the kind of more operational surface shifts.
So would an example of that be that if you pared down to the clients you really loved working with and you added a lot of value to actually being able to add a lot more value to them by doing more by providing more value by doing different things that in the past you might have been looking to outsource?
Yeah. So historically I would have been saying, hey, what's a system that I can create that another coach can follow to get, what Michael Gerber would say, to get a good enough result. Instead, the focus being, okay, what can I do, and what's the thinking that I can put in place, and what's the bit that I'm best qualified to do that can provide an exceptional result for a client.
Mm. Okay, that's interesting. Now, a lot of people use the term thought leadership right across the board in various contexts, and I know yours is a very specific context. So what do you understand by thought leadership?
Yeah, it's interesting. So Matt, obviously my business partner and the founder of Thought Leaders, started the business in 2000 when nobody talked about thought leadership at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the last half a dozen or years or so, it's suddenly become almost a cliche, which is kind of positive and negative for us. It's kind of having that brand ourselves. And for me, a thought leader is somebody who is extending the thinking in a particular domain in a certain direction. So it's a little bit like somebody who does a PhD. If you do a PhD, you have to be across whatever your area is, and then extend it in some direction. And so that's the same. In my mind, it's somebody who knows an area and is then extending it, is adding their own piece to it. And then within our business, we look at how do you commercialize that? So beyond just being a thought leader, how do you run a commercially successful thought leader's practice is what our business is about.
So a little bit like the innovator, pushing the boundaries of their own domain. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think one of the mistakes that both can make is to try and completely reinvent an entire field. Mm. So one of the mistakes for a thought leader is to try to be, we talk about being terminally unique, trying to have everything be brand new, rather than saying, okay, well, here's all this great thinking that's already there and here's how I'm adding on it, here's how I'm building on the body of work. And I think it's the same for an innovator. I think it's a mistake to try and innovate everything in a business or a product or an area. Most successful innovations, from my perspective, there is one element that's innovated, and there's lots of other stuff that's more conventional or proven.
Mm. Yeah,
Would you agree with that as an expert?
I think some of that comes back to, being able to sell whatever it is that you're innovating or providing thought leadership on, and how do you get the connection with the people. So if there's something, unless it's, even the iPhone or the iPod at its time, which was a pretty big innovation and a pretty big departure from what was conventionally available in those areas, was still kind of hooked back into the fundamental principle of being able to use a phone, a mobile phone, or being able to listen to audio on the go. So, that concept itself was still familiar to most people, so they could connect this new thing to a concept they were familiar with, and so it made sense to them.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. A smartphone was still primarily a phone. With the next innovation, it wasn't a whole new thing.
Hmm. All right. So describe to us how a thought leader practice. Then I know you use the term practice, and then the thought leader part you've described for us, how that's different to other business models. So the conventional entrepreneur model, where, as you said, ultimately the goal probably is to make yourself as the business founder or entrepreneur redundant and be able to sell the business?
Yeah, so it's the game for an entrepreneur, I think, is to start, grow and exit. Being a business coach for 10 years and working with thousands of small business owners, does not often successful. Many yeah, more businesses don't get there. But I think a successful entrepreneur is somebody who can do that, who can start something, systematize it, get out of it and themselves, and then exit it and sell it. And that starts generally with a market. So entrepreneurs will generally look at where's a market they can serve and then what can they do to serve that market. For thought leaders, rather than starting with a market, we generally start with the expert. So we start with what is it that you know? What are you passionate about? And what's your experience, your wisdom, your skills, your knowledge, your thought leadership? And then say, who does that help? So what's the market that can help? So it's a kind of subtle but really important distinction in the order that you'd think about things. Size is very different. We say a successful practice is $500,000 to $1.5 million with you and one or two support staff, whereas business can obviously scale almost infinitely. And when people talk about successful businesses, the numbers are much, much bigger than that. So we're playing a much smaller game, but a game that's much more likely to succeed. So the percentage of people who can be successful at this are much higher than the percentage of people who are going to start a unicorn business or exit a business for any kind of reasonable number. Said earlier, we talked about it, a business is based around systems. A practice has systems, but it's not based on systems. It's based on the brand of the expert or the thought leader.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really clear distinction. And to me, it kind of speaks to where some of the disconnects are in the traditional business entrepreneurial model, because Michael Gerber in the Beyond the E-Myth, he kind of goes into the whole thing about starting a business with a vision and a mission. But before you even start the business, you should have it clear that your end goal is to sell the business. So he's really clear on that in the latest iteration of E-Myth. And of course, having the mission to sell your business means you've got to have everything documented. And like you said, it's got to be based on systems. And most people that go into the entrepreneurship game and kind of are middling successful at it, I'd say, or less than that, don't actually have the systems in place. They kind of, at some point, they realize that maybe we better get some of these systems tidied up and documented, and they go about doing it in a catch-up way. And so the business kind of gets to that ceiling level and maybe doesn't go anywhere, and that they end up half in a job as their own boss, which is a painful place to be.
I'm a big fan of that model, and one of my books is actually co-authored with Michael Gerber. Dismissing that, but one of the pitfalls of running a practice is we get well-meaning but bad advice from business experts. So if somebody is going out as a solo expert, trying to be a speaker or an author or a mentor or a trainer or a facilitator or a coach, consultant, and then get these messages that are good business counsel but actually don't serve them, things like stop trading your time for money, advice that's great business, it's great advice for a founder of a business, but terrible advice for a thought leader running a practice.
Yeah. And as I said earlier, the distinction between that thought leader practice and other business models, and there's probably a few others that might have a hybrid or some totally distinct ways of doing things, and yet the conventional business advice is almost a template for the entrepreneurship growing and selling the business process, which is not necessarily what everybody does. Because a lot of entrepreneurs go in
to their business and they go into that growth phase, but then they can't let go. They're kind of emotionally attached to it. So the selling never happens, and that can be an issue as well.
Yes, and a lot of entrepreneurs end up with a very different perception of the value of their business than what the market puts on it. It's not a whole different problem.
Yeah.
But it's one of the things running a practice means, though, that you never get to sell it. It's another distinction. So in our community, we have a big emphasis on people making sure they invest outside the practice. Because you're not going to be able to rely on the sale to achieve your financial freedom. So one of our big memes is rockstar your income, not your lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Use the earnings from students who practice
to invest in other forms of income generation.
Yeah, exactly. As people are moving, as their income goes up, we're saying, no, so it doesn't mean you need a better car and a yacht and a bigger house. Keep your lifestyle the same for a decade and then create a surplus that you can put into other investments.
Hmm. Yeah, well, that's really sound advice. That's kind of life advice that's well worth paying attention to, I think. All right, well, you mentioned that with the thought leader practice, you start with the expertise. So let's say in my case, with my particular expertise. So how do you go about putting an appropriate value on that expertise and on the advice and the knowledge that you have for others?
Yeah, it's a really good question. What's your expertise?
I was just having a drink. It's around marketing and marketing systems. And then, you know, we're doing a lot around podcasting as well. We've built a really good podcasting system. So I think I know how to do that really well.
Yeah. So if we like, and in the practice, we'd say we're going to often have multiple domains of expertise. But if we talk about marketing systems, we would then say, who can you help? What's the market that can benefit from that? And who is it that you work with?
Okay. Well, in my case, it's business coaches and consultants, mainly in the technical arena.
Yeah. So then the question is how we go about putting a value on it is, say, design a journey that you can take people on. So in our case, we say we work with experts. We help people go from white belt to black belt. We help people build a successful practice, and we've said a successful practice is $500,000 to $1.5 million, et cetera, et cetera. And then so there's a value that people put on. So somebody who's an expert who says, oh, okay, right now I'm earning $100,000. If I was earning $500,000, I can see a clear value there. And then if that's the game they want to play and they believe that we can help them do it, then we put a price based on that value, on that journey, not based on the elements of a program. If you say when you help somebody with a marketing system, it'll take your number of prospects from here to here, which will take your revenue from here to here. What's that worth? Then the program is some smaller portion of that, so that the benefit is a multiple of what you charge. That's kind of how we go about pricing, and it's a little bit science and a little bit art, and it feels a little bit like black magic at times. But the key to it is price value, not price time.
I like the science part of it, but having a science background. So I have tended to approach things around, well, if you invest this much, here's the return you get, and it's a big multiple of that. I guess I've probably approached it from the other end of that rather than start with here's the outcome or the transformation or the change that's going to happen if you work with me, take my expertise, do all the work that you're required to do to make it happen, then that's the outcome, and then work backwards from there.
Yeah, and I think that's like most of us, that's not how we think naturally, and it's definitely not how we're taught to think. Most of us start with, we come from jobs. Most of us have started going, okay, well, if I work this much time, this is how much I get paid. And then what we want to do is just kind of increase that number. But we're still coming from a time for money mindset.
That's right, yeah. You mentioned earlier that the traditional advice around the entrepreneurship model is get away from the time for money. So I think your advice is pretty much the same, except you're taking a different approach. You're saying price for value, not for the time you're spending on it.
Yeah.
Price for value based on the outcome of the client.
In what's valuable for them, and what are the problems that you solve for them. And the difference, though, within a practice is it's still your time that they buy. We're not pricing it based on the time. But if I'm a business owner, what I'm saying is you'll get these products or you'll get my team. In a practice, I'm still saying you get me. But how I price me is not based on how long I'm there for, but what's the difference that I'll make.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the story of the guy that went in to fix the machine in the factory with the screwdriver, turned the screw half a turn clockwise and charged $1,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was $999.50 or something was for the know-how, what screw to turn and how to do it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, now, one of the things that I wonder about here, and I know you do a lot of work in thought leader practice around mindset, but one of the challenges I'm sure you've encountered is where people, they have some specialist knowledge, they might be struggling a little bit to capture that genius and package it up in a way that can make a contribution to the target audience. But the other thing that they struggle with is the imposter syndrome. So who am I to be telling these other businesses how they should be doing their marketing or how to start a podcast?
Yep. Yeah, I think there's three things that we all need to overcome if you're going to run a successful practice. And one of them is this voice we all have, I think, that says I'm not good enough, sometimes called imposter syndrome. I think everybody, to a greater or lesser extent, has that. We also have another voice that will say some version of I don't deserve this. And we're all a little bit dysfunctional around money. And these are the core things, mindset things that are going to trip us up on this journey. And I think it's why it's really important to have a community of people who are on the same journey. It's why it's really hard to do this on your own, because we'll come up against this and then retreat. In our program anyway, we don't try to fix any of that. So we're not going to deal with. You're in the program and you come to me and say, Pete, I'm not good enough voice is coming up. I'm not going to sit down and say, okay, so tell me where this comes from and what was your relationship with your mother like and how can we reframe that? What we're going to do is say, okay, got it. Now go and sell something and then come back and see how that feels. Mm. And the way to move through a lot of this stuff is just to keep going until the results convince you otherwise.
Okay, yeah. So I know you're really strong on implementation and taking action. So that's kind of how you're tackling all of that, and maybe take small steps, because taking a small steps builds a little bit of that confidence muscle, and that's probably the best thing to overcome an imposter syndrome.
Yeah, it's James. I really like James Clear's work around this. He talks about atomic habits, like taking very small habits.
Yeah, I've just finished reading that. It's a great book.
Yeah, we've actually got him coming out to speak at our next immersion, which
next week as we're
recording. It'll probably be in the past by the time this gets out into the world. But yeah, really, really excited to have him come and come and talk at business school.
All right. Now, I've got a couple of questions around kind of individual reputation and individual positioning. So with the thought leader practice, obviously it's the thought leader, the person themselves. So let's say me in my case, who is the brand. And so how important is reputation, and what do you do? What do I do to keep improving my reputation, make sure it's intact and perhaps enhanced in the eyes of my target market?
Yeah, it's another difference between a business and a practice. Is in a practice, your reputation is the single most important thing. So while a business might be able to say, well, we can churn through customers, and if there's a percentage of people who get annoyed, so be it, and we write long sales emails that annoy people, or we do telemarketing that some people get annoyed by, so be it. We can play the numbers game. In a practice, we can't do that. We can't do anything that is going to hurt our reputation. And it's one of the things that kind of my brief to my team is, you know, we kind of have this hierarchy of things where we say, okay, if there's something that's actually bringing in cash, that's important. So we want to prioritize the things that are going to bring in money. So if there's if we have a form with a credit card number on it, process that. Don't leave that for another 4 days, and don't put that at the bottom of the priority list. But I say even more important than that is anything that's my brand. So if I've made a promise, we need to do everything we can so that that promise gets kept. If I send an email saying, great to talk to you, Jürgen. We'll get a book out to you in the mail. The team will take care of that this week. Then absolutely we need to take care of that this week. And in my mind, it's the most important thing in my practice, and it's the same with the team. And part of it is playing the kind of the 10-year game as well as the 12-month game and the three-month game. So we'll have a sales target and say in this quarter we're aiming to sell this much of this thing, and we should go full out for that and treat it, play that game like it's life or death, but never do anything to win the three-month game that's going to hurt the 10-year game. So we're never going to kind of burn through our list to try and close whatever sales we can this quarter at the expense of reputation and brand and the long game.
Yeah.
Did that answer all of your questions? I feel like it was another part of the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big topic, really, but I think it's important to draw it out that in the model of a practice and a thought leader practice, where the brand is the individual, that reputation is just absolutely critical.
Yeah, no, and I remember the second part of your question was what to do to increase that.
Yeah.
And it's basically be generous. One of Matt's lines is that your information should be free and your experience is expensive. And I really like that as an idea of let your thinking go, put it out into the world, have it be available, give away your ideas, be very generous in what you put in your blogs and your newsletters, and give away books and make it all accessible, and be very generous with it, which then is good for your reputation and your positioning, and actually positions you more as the expert anyway. So it's morally the right thing to do and commercially the right thing to do.
Yeah. And I love the way Well, you've attributed it to Matt. So I love the way he said that, or he expressed that, because I always talk about, you know, being very generous with the content you publish online, because that positions you as an expert and it shows people that, you know, there's value for them in the information you've published, and also that you are generous, and then, you know, it gives them a taste of what they might expect working with you. But people still are reluctant to do that because there's a bit of a fear of giving away too much. But I think what the way you've expressed it there with your information's free but your experience is expensive, is a really good way of looking at it.
There's another great line from Gary Doctorow, who's a science fiction writer. People are also worried that other people are going to steal their ideas. And he says the problem isn't piracy, it's obscurity. Which I really like. Don't worry so much about someone taking it. If they do, good luck to them. Mm. It'll come back to you anyway.
Yeah. The listener who's an innovator, one of my mentors said, you know, the best way to be innovative is to give away all your best stuff, because then you have to invent new stuff.
Yes. Like the whole open source movement.
Yeah. All right. Now, in terms of positioning yourself, do you recommend that the person who's interested in following this thought leader practice model gets their own name as the domain name, as their kind of business name, if you like?
Yep, absolutely. Mm. One of the emails we send to kind of new students right up off the bat is to say, make sure that you've registered yourname.com or some version of that. And if you can't get it, almost worth changing your name so that you can. A little bit tongue in cheek. Peter Cook is a pretty hard one to get. I sat on that for 10 years waiting until it became available. And then Peter, the British comedian, Peter Cook, when he died, then the fan page, they shut down their fan page, so the URL came up for auction. And I remember I got approval from Trish to spend $5,000 on it, but secretly I was probably going to go up to $10,000. Then I won the auction for $240. So this was 10 years ago.
Well, I was just going to say $5,000 would have probably been a steal in today's marketplace, but no, that's really good. $240 is a no-brainer.
I was very happy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to ask what if your name's John Smith or something like that? Yeah. I imagine johnsmith.com's taken.
Yes, pretty much everything is. So then you put a hyphen or you get .com.au or you, or you use your middle name or you change your name.
Yeah. I remember when I was playing around with, in the early days of my business with domains, and I, looked around for my name and I thought, oh, it's available. Fancy that. And so I just bought it or registered for a normal registration price. So I've got .com and .com.au, but I've been using it to run my photography hobby site. So maybe I have to rethink that strategy. All right. Now, we have talked about systems a little bit, and what's your approach to running systems within this thought leader practice model?
Absolutely. You want to have systems. Systems make life easier. You want to reduce having to think the same thing multiple times. So when you work out how to publish your blog, draft a procedure for how to do it, and then ideally hand that over to somebody else. So all four systems, it's just not, they're not the highest priority. Whereas in a business that you're trying to sell, they really are the highest priority. And there are bits about how you deliver your stuff that you're not going to be able to systematize, because it's what's your magic, what's your genius.
Yeah, that's right. And I think there's a bit of that in all businesses, and that's where if people are really driven to just systemize everything where sometimes there's a breakdown or a disconnect or it's documented so vaguely that the next person that does it, the quality is just not the same.
Yep.
All right. Absolutely. Now, you talked earlier, you've kind of alluded to this being a game or treating it like a game, and you also talked about having scientific bit of science and bit of art and gut feel, but having a measure in place how you're going. Now, I know you have a scoreboard with the thought leader practice process, so tell us a little bit about that and how you approach that and what can kind of other businesses learn out of keeping a scoreboard and keeping track of their key metrics.
Yes, I think that energy of a game is really important. It helps for anything. This is part of my, I guess, my implementation thinking. Anything that's a long-term project that's three months or a year or 3 years or 10 years, we're not good at. We're not designed for that. We haven't evolved for long-term projects. And so we need to have as many hacks around as we can. And one of those for me is imagining it's a game. Because that lets me go right to the edge of my capability. It lets me set my goals and my targets and my projects right at that point where I don't know if I can do it or not, rather than because I'm treating it like a game, it's okay. I'm really okay with it not working, with it failing, with it being an experiment.
Yeah.
And it means that when something doesn't work, the impact psychologically is lesser. It doesn't really bring me down. I think you get what you focus on. And so when in a practice we say your job is to think, sell and deliver, then you need to measure how much thinking you're doing, how many ideas you're creating, how your sales are going, your meeting, your approaches, your meetings, your actual sales, and what delivery you do. And then in any business, it's really important to know what are the key metrics. And I think the challenge a lot of people have is there's too many. Either people don't look at anything at all, or they'll have a scoreboard with 30 things on it.
Yeah, and that gets overwhelming.
Not knowing what's the key or the key two or three measures to look at.
So if you, let's say you have a sales target for the month of whatever the number is, and then you break it. So you take that and break that down into, so I've got to make so many sales calls. I've got to have a conversion rate of whatever it is so that I convert the right number of calls into a client, and then I'll meet my sales target. Is that how it works?
Yeah. So this was the whole of the business school. We come together every 3 months and we create the targets. Everybody comes together, so 150 people for 3 days, every 3 months to create the plan for the next 3 months. And for us, a successful cluster, a successful offer is $10,000 a month. So if somebody's launching a $5,000 coaching program, we would say a successful quarter would be $30,000, $10,000 a month for 3 months. You would need to sell 6 coaching programs over that time to meet that target. We would expect a 1 in 4 conversion rate. That's generally a starting point for something that's new. So you would need to have 24 meetings to get 6 sales, which means you probably need 48 approaches. And then the numbers will, as you get better at it, those conversion rates might go up. As people start to get referred in, they'll come up. But that's kind of how we would start a plan for a new offer for a quarter and then track all of those numbers throughout the quarter. So you know exactly, okay, if you come to the end of the quarter and it didn't work, you can say, okay, was it, where did it break down? Did I just not get in touch with enough people, or did my meetings weren't effective, et cetera?
Mm. Yeah, so you break it down into, and I think you talked earlier on about the journey. So that's a journey in itself, isn't it? Sort of the journey to get a new client, and breaking it down into each element of the journey there, so that you can, you know, what actions you need to take very clearly, and also you can look back in a scientific manner and say, well, how did I do? Yeah. And if I didn't meet target, where are the potential areas for improvement?
Absolutely.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's great. I could dig into this a lot more, but I'm watching the time here a little bit, and I think it's time we moved on to the buzz, which is our innovation round, and it's designed to help our audience who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions. They're generally around innovation. Hopefully you'll give us some really insightful short answers that'll inspire the listener to go and do something awesome today. So what do you think is the number one thing? What do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
Create space. I'm a big fan of Cal Newport's work and his book Deep Work, and I think it's having space to do deep work and go deep on something, think hard.
Yeah, that's great. And there's lots of different ways that can be done, isn't there? And so I know you're into meditation and you're also, and I can't think of the right term now, the monk, the order of monks you're in. So I guess that's monk. Part of the... Yeah. Sorry, what was that?
Yeah, I am an Ashaya monk.
Okay, yeah. So I guess that's part of how you create that space?
Yeah, and that's also being, I think, linked a lot to that is being present. So the more you're in the moment, I think the more you're available for those ideas to come.
Yeah. All right. Great. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
I'm going to cheat and give you two because you've given me one there. I think a meditation practice for me is probably the number one thing. But the other thing, I do a 3-day retreat on my own every quarter. So head into the bush with no... We've got a block of land out down past Apollo Bay in the Otway National Park in the rainforest with no electricity, no phone connection, and, 3 days to disconnect is where I get my best thinking and where I come up with the best ideas for business and products.
Mm. And that's creating space too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. What's one of the resources you use most often?
A pen and a paper. So I have a journaling practice as well, and being able to I've got young kids, so it doesn't always happen, but my ideal morning starts an hour before the girls get up, and the first thing I do is make a cup of tea and journal for 20 minutes, and that'll often, bring things out of the subconscious, and whatever's happened overnight in however all that works captures a lot of the things that might otherwise disappear.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to get more disciplined around doing journaling every morning. I've been doing it for probably about nearly a year now, but I kind of fall off the wagon every now and then for weeks on end, and then it's a bit hard to get back into it. So I need to take the James Clear philosophy again and maybe do 2 minutes every day for a while and then start to ramp up from there.
Yeah. Mm.
All right. What's the best way to keep a client on track?
To keep a client on track? That's a really good question. I think it's not rely on discipline. So it's interesting when you're talking about your journaling habit.
Yeah.
And this is, what James Clear would say is how do we enable somebody to implement something over time? If it's relying on kind of character or discipline or willpower, that's fraught. I'm much more interested in what can we put around somebody and myself primarily to keep something on track. So when I talk about a client, it's also what do I do to keep myself on track? And it's how can I create an environment that calls that forward? How can I be really clear and present to what the goal is? How can I have a team that supports it? And what accountability do I need that'll keep me on track?
Hmm. All right. That's all really good advice. And I like the idea. I was listening to a TED talk the other day about a chap that it was titled something along the lines of "Cycling Has Saved My Life." And as a keen cyclist, that title attracted me, so I listened in. And there's a whole backstory to this, but basically he said, you know, when we start cycling as kids, we get our first bike, we ride up and down the road, then we start riding around the neighborhood, then we start riding around the block, and then we start riding into town and into the next village, and our radius expands and our stamina and our length on the bike expands, and if we enjoy it, we keep doing that. So he was talking about how he'd had a health scare and got back on the bike, and he was basically taking the same approach there. And I thought, well, that's a nice metaphor for any habit, really.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I like it.
Hmm. All right. And the next question, the last one of the buzz round, is very pertinent today. What's the number one thing anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
Persist. So I think that this is a very unsexy answer because it's not something that you can do quickly. But I think that there's something about, for the continue your cycling metaphor, I've got a friend who's been on a couple of tours with Phil Anderson, an Australian ex Tour de France cyclist.
Yeah, and he lives down the Apollo Bay way, doesn't he?
Yeah, and one of the things that he says, and the cyclists say, there's just no substitute for kilometres in the legs.
Yep.
And with Phil, like he can start a tour and he can be kind of out of shape and he hasn't done much, but 3 days in, he's good as gold.
Mm.
And I think in a practice, in a business, there are people who have been at it for a decade or 15 years or two decades. And it's we generally overestimate what we're going to get done in the short term and underestimate what we're going to get done in the long term. And if you've been at something and you've kept at it kind of through ups and downs, you end up being differentiated just through dint of time and wisdom and experience.
Mm. All right. Well, that's great advice. And it certainly highlights one of the things I like to remind people of, that there's no shortcuts to anything.
Yep.
Where can people say thank you for what you've shared with us today, maybe get in touch and find out more about the Thought Leaders project and school?
Anybody who's, I guess this is coming back to what we're saying about being generous as well and practicing what I preach. If anybody's interested in growing a Thought Leaders practice and wants a copy of our book, I'd be very happy to send one to anyone. Just send me an email at peter@petercook.com and I'll organise a complimentary copy of the book. It's the Thought Leaders Practice on how to grow a commercially successful Thought Leaders Practice your way.
And we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. So finally then, Peter, who would you like me to interview on a future Innova Buzz podcast and why?
Well, when it comes to innovation, the conversation that I would love to have with someone would be with Elon Musk. I think it's probably going to be a big ask for you to get him on the show, but yeah,
I would love to have Elon Musk on, and usually I follow up a question with, oh, can you get us an introduction? But that might be a challenge.
Possibly not. Yeah. What I love is his underlying intent around all his innovation to look after the future of humanity. So I think he's obviously, like, each of his businesses, like, standalone, you can look at the amazing innovations, but the underlying narrative and intent through everything he does is, I think, quite extraordinary. So there's a challenge for you. Get Elon on the show.
Good. Well, we'll put that on our list and put some plan in place where we might be able to make that happen. All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and insights with us so generously today, Pete, on the Innova Buzz podcast. I've really enjoyed this. I've learned a lot, and I'm sure that the listener will get a lot out of this as well. So I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
My pleasure. Thanks very much for having me, Jürgen.
Thanks, Peter. Well, wasn't that a wonderfully informative conversation with Peter? I hope you took something with you from what he shared. I particularly like the idea of valuing your product or service by starting with the customer journey and the change you help them make. Also love the quote from Matt Church, "Your information should be free, your experience expensive." I'd love to know what you took away from Peter's interview. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/PeterCook. That is PeterCook. All lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/PeterCook. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with Peter there, as well as links to his website, to the Thought Leaders website, and to the Thought Leaders Practice book, which Peter has kindly offered you a free copy of. You can obtain that copy by emailing Peter and mentioning his interview on the Innova Buzz podcast. Now, Peter gave me a challenge. He suggested we interview Elon Musk on a future Innova Buzz podcast. Now, that is going to be a challenge, and I wonder if Elon is in fact listening to this. I imagine he's probably got bigger fish to fry. But just in case, Elon, keep an eye on whatever it is you normally monitor for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of Peter Cook. Finally, I'd like to give a shout out to Stephanie Hayes from Canada for her review of the Innova Buzz podcast. She says, "Jürgen has a way of drawing out the most relevant information for business owners across the board. He's inquisitive, insightful, and authentically interested in what makes the business world go round." Thank you, Stephanie. I'm really pleased you see it that way, because they're the kind of things that I aim to do on the interviews. So I hope to continue doing that, and stay tuned, keep listening. And of course, if you want a quick mention on a future podcast, then leave your review. Remember to visit innovabiz.co/VIP to access the Transformational Marketing Hub and all its free and exceptionally useful information that's going to help you transform your marketing. Also, check out our Tales of Marketing Transformation show at talesofmarketingtransformation.com, where each episode will provide one valuable message to help you on your journey of marketing transformation. And of course, tune in again next week to the Innova Buzz podcast, where we've got more fantastic guests lined up, including Rob Brayman of Cogent Analytics and my friends Alicia and James Crook of Massage Champions. Stay connected. Subscribe to the Innova Buzz podcast so you'll make sure you'll never miss another episode. Head on over to innovabiz.co/subscribe. We'd also love you to leave us a review, because what you think matters to us. Take some of the ideas you've heard today and apply them in your business. Any thoughts, ideas, suggestions, or questions, then share them in the comments below the blog post. And remember, if you want to get better marketing results than you ever have, join our fantastic Facebook community at the Tales of Marketing Transformation Facebook group. All you have to do is go to innovabiz.co/TMA. It's free to join. I hope to see you there soon. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember to be awesome and keep innovating.